Welcome into the Podium Game Podcast. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Ethan Sherwood-Strauss from ESPN.com. He covers the Warriors and also does a bunch of other cool stuff like True Hoop TV. Ethan, what's going on?
Now, the Mudge, it's a beautiful sunny day in Oakland, California, so I'm delighted to be talking to you.
Thank you for taking time out. I really do appreciate it. So the Warriors are pretty good at basketball, and what's the experience been like for you covering a team that's kind of playing at an historic level right now?
Well, it's wonderful. There's this odd tension where you're not supposed to be a homer and you're not supposed to be emotionally impacted by the level of basketball in your area, but that's total BS. I love watching better basketball in my hometown. I love watching the Bay Area get more invested in it, and more to your point, just aesthetically, it's amazing. This high-pressure defense, the constant switching, that constant activity leading to instantaneous points on the other end, transition threes, it's awesome. And I don't know if anybody actually cares about this, of the people who listen to this, but from just a work perspective, it's so much better to interact with this regime, this coaching staff, than last year's regime. It just makes my job from the day-to-day perspective so much easier.
What point during this season did you realize, like, you thought they were going to be good before the season? I believe either you wrote a story predicting they would win or either that they were going to be a very strong contender. When did you realize, you're like, all right, that was kind of right, and holy crap, I might have even underestimated them a little bit?
Man, when was that moment? When exactly was that moment? You know, I don't know if I ever had that moment. The stats they're churning out are ridiculous, don't get me wrong, but it really came in the preseason, and this was my argument when I wrote about them as my title prediction. If you choose the local team when nobody else is choosing the local team to win the championship, you're automatically written off as a deluded homer because we tend to overrate the things that are up close and inside our lives, right? That's a tendency, right?
But
I
would say you're either overly negative or overly positive. You don't do a good job balancing.
Yeah, and you know, so I think that's the assumption. But my argument was that if there's a new trend. You're far more likely to pick up on it if you're close to it. You're more likely to hear a car alarm if you're on the block that the car alarm is sounding. And let's face it, a lot of people weren't watching Golden State's preseason. But this was presaged in the preseason. They were a dramatically different team. And that's easy to dismiss and easy to write off as, oh, you're bringing preseason into it. Preseason results, preseason doesn't matter. But you could just see that they're entire approach offensively had dramatically shifted, that Klay Thompson was now dribbling and driving, and there were no more isolation post-ups, and this was going to change the game. That was obvious from the preseason, so I can't say I'm all that surprised, even if they're a little bit above my expectations.
All right, outside of injuries, all right, they're coming off the loss to the Bulls. It seemed, I'm guessing by the way you tweeted out your story after the game, that there was probably people going a little bit overboard in worry with what happened.
Oh, there's no perspective out here. The fans aren't used to this. You know, we were joking about it. Marcus Thompson, who used to be the Warriors beat reporter and now is a columnist down here, and I saw it on my feed where people are instantly saying this is why they need to make a trade for another big man, and there's no perspective. It's, hey, I don't understand what's going on. I mean, we're supposed to win these home games, right? Every single one of them. You know, they've won 19 in a row. The last that they'd lost happened November 11th, 2014. So given that, combined with how there's no history of success prior, really, in the organization, there is a lack of perspective within the fan base.
Is there, outside of injuries, is there a flaw in the team that worries you a little bit?
It's the flaw that nobody ever cites, which is a lack of shooting. that's their flaw that never gets brought up because they are defined in the mind of fans and in the mind of national commentators like Charles Barkley, jump shooting team because Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. You know, those two names, premier jump shooters, superstar jump shooters, but that ignores how they don't have a whole lot of shooting outside of it, and that can impact their spacing negatively when they have some of these lineups where you have David Lee, Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, and you can help off Iguodala since his shot takes so long to develop. They can get squeezed. They could, as crazy as it sounds to a lot of people, use some more shooting.
What happened? Lee used to be a pretty decent jump shooter. Was it when he got the teeth stuck in his elbow? Is that the point where he hasn't came back from, or just kind of lost confidence in it?
I think it might have been the other injuries, the lower extremities, the hamstring, and just a general list of maladies that negatively impacted his ability to get into a rhythm with his jumper. He looked good with it last night against the Bulls. He was pretty good, but there's just something to his form where he's not able to broaden that out. It'd be so nice if you could just step out and hit a three-pointer, but it just seems like the shot is too flat for that to ever happen.
All right, one of the guys that doesn't have an issue with shooting, Klay Thompson. It's weird that my first instinct on this podcast with you is to talk about Klay Thompson and not Steph Curry. I never thought that was a thing that would happen.
Yeah.
These last three games, he's averaging like 37 points per game. It's the best stretch of his career, right?
Right, yeah, I would say so. I'd have to dig in deep. He had a monster beginning to the season. But this is, you know, we can tend to do this thing where when something amazing happens, we can ascribe it to fluke or small sample size. But there are definitional moments in a career that shift how a player is viewed, that shift how a player views himself. That moment came for Steph Curry when he scored 54 points in Madison Square Garden. He started taking completely different shots after that. He started taking more shots, more contested shots. It gave him more capital to spend as a player. We might see that with Klay Thompson, where this caught the attention of the entire league. There's now even more fear when it comes to dealing with him, which he can leverage into more drives. And it likely gives him more confidence in terms of what he's capable of, which can help him going forward. So I do believe that these signature moments can propel a career forward.
Now, so we'll go back to the 37-point game real quick here. When I didn't watch it live. I was at the Suns game that night, then went out for a couple drinks, got home in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden I'm seeing tweets, and I'm like, oh, holy crap, that happened. Wow. When I did go back and watch it, the thing that jumped out at me, in totality, it was absolutely incredible. But when you look at it on a play-by-play basis, it wasn't like, to me at least, it didn't look like he did anything that was absolutely insane. He was just making shots.
Yeah, he had a drive. He had a nice drive finger roll combination. The shot that was there were two shots that were gasp-worthy, and that was one where he faked calling for a screen and pointed down in front of Stauskas before draining a 28-footer. The other, it's when his feet were all completely screwed up and tangled in the corner, and he just unleashed it, pure swish. But it was just hitting shots. You know, it's amazing not only that somebody scored 37 points in a quarter, but that they did it with only two free throws. That's the aspect to me that was most mind-blowing. If he hadn't been fouled at the very end of the quarter, he's setting the record for points in a quarter without ever getting to the line. I'm not sure we'll ever see anything like that again.
Here's the thing with Klay that I think at least I overlooked, and I don't know about you or others, but the thing about his game is he, in a way, now I'm not saying he's Kevin Durant or anything like that, but like Durant, Anthony Davis, LaMarcus Aldridge, when he's going up against other shooting guards, like when those guys go up against players who defend their position, he just has an inherent advantage that you can't teach. His height plus his length and his wingspan, if you look at his draftexpress.com numbers from the combine, he's a really long dude, so he can just get a shot off at any time. And that's a skill that just can't be taught because it's just a gift he was given from when he was born.
Yeah, and it starts so high too. He does dip the ball, but it's right at his chest. He doesn't put it at his waist like so many jump shooters do. So quick, and it's just up nearly vertical and unperturbed by closeouts. And that's what's scary about it, that you can do everything right and it might not matter. It might not matter. Now he's shooting off the bounce, shooting off the dribble like Curry. What's interesting to me, and this is something that we don't really account for when we talk about analytics, is the ability of players to learn from each other. If you notice with Klay Thompson, if you watch his progression, he's doing a lot of things that Steph Curry has done. He's using things that Steph Curry uses. He, you know, not only is progressing off the dribble in the way Curry has, he's doing the shot fake and then sidestep three-pointer that he never used to do. That's something that Steph used to do. That's something that Steph has pioneered. So it's funny when we have this discussion that's burbling up now that I think is silly at this point, but it's starting, which is, I don't know if I like Clay better than Curry or Curry better than Clay, and it's a little muddled because one is learning from the other.
Did their relationship just grow naturally, or was that pushed along by this coaching staff, maybe the people that were around before them?
I don't even know if it's a relationship that causes this. Now, they do have a relationship. They have a good relationship, but a lot of it is just observation and practice. I've asked Clay before, is this something that Steph taught you? And he's joked, he doesn't help me with anything. You know, he poured water on my head after one of the games. There was a post-game interview where that happened, and he cited that. And so from what I'm told, it's just really observation and less helping. Now, you do see more of education taking place in the defensive end, where you see Andre Iguodala talking to a lot of the wing defenders about what to do and actually teaching. That is a more mentor-like relationship than what you'll see with Steph and Clay.
What I don't want to go all the way back into the Clay love trade, but I am the love stuff. But I am curious. Who do you know who the loudest voice in the room was opposing that?
Opposing it, probably Jerry West. You know, it's hard for me to really measure levels of loudness, but he certainly was he was opposed to trading Clay. He was the dominant force behind drafting him, and a lot of the old school guys just didn't trust Kevin Love. They didn't trust his numbers. They thought he was a good stats, bad team guy. That's a way of looking at players that I reject, and a way of looking at it that I wasn't about, but retrospectively, you got to say maybe those old guys knew what they were talking about.
Yeah, I think they were pretty smart about this one.
Yeah.
What part of Curry's game do you think maybe goes underappreciated the most?
His passing. His passing's brilliant. He takes a lot of risks. I equate him to Brett Favre, where he's a high-risk, high-reward quarterback out there. But he makes, and you saw one of them last night, he makes... Now that Rondo's not exactly Rondo anymore, and Chris Paul's is a machine. He makes smart passes, but they're not ultra creative. He makes creative passes. His creativity as a distributor is at the top level. He might be the best in the league, and that often gets overshot, but that doesn't even make sense in this case. Overlooked in this case. I should say, by the way, about Jerry West, to your previous question about the Clay Love trade, because I forgot to add it, there was an analytical component to why they made the decision, and West liked to cite how the Warriors averaged the fewest passes per possession in the league, and that when they changed their system, things would get better for Clay. So as much as this was an old school versus new school analytics type of debate, it was informed in a funny way by analytics.
All right, so back to Curry with after the West comment. I forgot where I was going to go there. Let's talk about Draymond Green.
That's always a good way to go. That's always a good salvation. Let's talk about Draymond Green. I'm going to use that. I think I should use that when a lot of things, you know, come up that are surprising I don't want to address, or I lose my train of thought, if I fart at the dinner table, if I whatever it is. Hey, let's talk about Draymond Green. That is a good segue. I like it.
And then you need the Twitter thing with his face to come on underneath it, the one that everyone uses all the time.
Well, which picture do they use? I'm not aware of this. What is the Draymond picture that gets used?
The funny one where he's at the podium.
That's funny too. Was that that was actually in response to a question I asked him. If it's the face, not, you know, to be so narcissistic about it, but if it's the face that you're referencing, I think it was when I asked him if Clay should start in the All-Star game, and that was the face he made.
Oh, I really like Steve Kerr's idea
that they should shoot for it. That's a funny, subtle way of saying that he's probably going to start Clay, huh?
I'll go this, where it's pretty even. You can go either way.
I think that Harden deserves to start, but I also think that Kerr should troll him. It's one of those things where what's fair isn't necessarily what should be done. You know, like what Kerr should do is to have a loyalty to his own guy and to also punish Harden for, you know, say that the Warriors weren't that good. And this is his opportunity to do that. So he should do that, even though Harden deserves to be the starter.
Yeah, you can never bust the guy's balls for picking his own guy. I mean, that's there's nothing ridiculous about that at all. And Clay locked them up twice, too.
True. Oh, yeah. And, you know, right now I do think it's a debate. I said it wasn't a debate before about MVP, Harden versus Curry. At a specific juncture, I said it wasn't a debate. Now that Curry has had a rough stretch and Harden's had a great stretch, I believe it is. But I think it should matter that the Rockets got crushed 4-0. I'm sorry, it should. And at least two of those games, were billed as a battle between MVPs. These were not randomly taken out of the season. This was the players involved knew the expectations. So while I don't think that should necessarily be a massive force in deciding MVP at the end of the year, the idea that we should just be agnostic about these things, I find to be a little bit ridiculous. And Clay did lock up Harden. Most especially in Houston when the Rockets got blown out. That was perhaps his most impressive defensive performance of the year, I would say, yes.
Out of Curry, Green, and Clay, whose development path has surprised you the most?
Easily Clay. Curry always was obviously gifted and obviously undone by a bad organization and not the greatest handling of his health situation. You knew that there was a basketball genius who was being repressed effectively. That was always obvious. And it was obvious that he was the best three-point shooter, especially off the dribble. And it was great in that morass of mediocrity that somebody could just do one thing at an elite level. Now, Draymond improved his three-point shooting, but he's had all these elements that he's bringing to the fore for a while, and that was obvious from his rookie year. If you look at the last two postseasons, you could say that Draymond was their second most productive player the last two postseasons, so it's not that surprising. I'm not even sure he's really improved that much. He's just getting more playing time this season. Now, Clay shocked me. I did not expect it. I thought that Clay would be catch-and-shoot three-pointer guy, 3-and-D, a little bit of a post game, but post game, you know, that's not that efficient. I have been absolutely astounded by his ability to add the off the dribble game, to pass better this season. I wrote an article on some of the new moves he's added. His ability to improve has been impressive.
Which it was logical, because when I think of how guys develop, the two parts I think are probably hardest from an offensive perspective is getting better ball handling and passing, and that's what he's managed to get better at. It's really pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. You know, we expect, as you're saying, you know, we expect that you add three-point shooting, so it's great to take a gamble on somebody who has everything else. Hey, Draymond Green might be... Yeah, Draymond's not an example of that because he shot the three well in college, but you know what I mean. I guess we have to adjust, and this is something that I wish I knew more about. I wish I knew more about which skills were easy to improve versus not easy to improve, because I don't have a good sense of that. I think rebounding is fairly consistent, but then we have a situation like Harrison Barnes, who's rebounding so much better this year than he did last year. So it's very complicated as to what skills one can improve and what skills you're just never going to be able to.
We'll finish off on this. Curry, Clay, both in the three-point shootout. Who do you, if you had to pick one of them in that type of setting, who do you think's a better shooter?
Clay. If it's off the dribble, Curry, but we don't have an off the dribble shooting contest. They use the rack, and if a rack is involved, I'm going Clay. And if I have to pick someone to win it, I'm going Korver.
Oh, you'd go Korver over Clay. But I'm the same as you. It's weird. I think Curry's I can't even say Curry's a better shooter anymore, but in the 3-point contest setting, I think Clay also. Do you have anything out there that you're doing that you want to plug and let everyone know about?
I have an article coming up on how the Warriors built their defense that should be rolling out on February 4th that I've put a lot of work into, talked to a lot of different people. It's just the story of how this organization that for four decades was bad at defense finally put it all together, and so check that out eventually, I guess.
Yep, that will be on ESPN.com. Keep an eye out for that. Ethan, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that wraps up another edition of the Podium Game Podcast.